Thou will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
Season 6, Episode 4 of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon 1, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another edition of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast, where we are talking about the Larry Scott years here in Season 6, in 1965 and 1966, Mr. Olympia, where Larry Scott won the very first two Mr. Olympia competitions. And today we're going to have part two of our interview with Roger Schwab. Roger Schwab was here a couple of weeks ago for episode one, where he was talking about the 1965 Mr. Olympia. And today we're going to talk about the 1966 Mr. Olympia, because Roger was at both of them. He's from Pennsylvania, I believe, Pittsburgh. And he traveled out to Brooklyn, New York, to see the first two Mr. Olympia competitions. So today we're going to talk about the second Mr. Olympia that Larry Scott won over Harold Poole. And also Sergio Oliva was in that contest, and Chuck Sipes, and we'll talk a little also about the Mr. World contest that Sergio won. That was Sergio's entrance into the IFBB, and Dave Draper won the Mr. Universe that night, and I believe Chet Yorton beat out Frank Zane and Don Howarth for the Mr. America, so we got a lot to talk about with Roger Schwab. And I want to mention we are brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon 1. Everybody wants to be a champion, everybody wants to be the best, and at Redcon 1, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a six-minute mile, Redcon 1 has something for those willing to put in the work. Their premier clinically dosed pre-workout, Total War, is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And you can fuel your body after those workouts with the revolutionary MRE. This is the only whole food complete meal replacement, with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and the carb sources coming from sweet potatoes and oats, and it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon 1, the highest state of readiness. And as always, you can enter the discount code LEGENDS, and you will get 15% discount off of your order. And be sure to check out their MRE bars that they also have available on the website that is selling really well also. So thank you to Redcon 1 for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. And we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements to the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand that I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in the Masters Division in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2018 Arnold Classic Physique Champion, and he's also the 2017 Classic Physique Olympia Champion. So Breon Ansley is the top Classic Physique Champion in the world right now. They sponsor also Sergio Oliva Jr., Tom Platz, Samir Banut. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 at oldschoollabs.com and you will get 12% off any order. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, what else is going on in the world, guys? I did do a couple interviews this week with a couple more guests that we're going to be having on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast in the next couple weeks. One of them was Vic Downs, and Vic Downs is now 89 years old. He is from Canada. And if you remember our interview with Jerry Branham last week, Jerry was talking about Vic Downs because Vic Downs was in that competition against Sergio Oliva, I believe, at the Mr. World contest in 1966. So Vic got into bodybuilding kind of late. He was in his 30s, but he competed in the 1966 NABBA Mr. Universe that Arnold was in when Arnold was only 19, and Arnold got second place to Chet Yorton, and Vic Downs was third place in that contest. And then Vic also competed, as I just said, in the 1966 Mr. World contest, and he also competed in the 1967 Mr. Universe contest that was held in Montreal, Canada, that Sergio Oliva won, and Vic got second to Sergio at that contest, and I believe he beat out Rick Wayne and Frank Zane also, and Vic won the most muscular award at that show. So he didn't compete very long in bodybuilding, maybe 10 years, and then he became minister. And he's been doing minister work for the last, I believe, 40 years. So we had an interesting conversation with Vic Downs. That'll probably be up next week or two on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And then we also talked to Don Howarth. And Don, of course, was a famous bodybuilder in the 1960s. He was known for his very big deltoids. He had that big V shape. And he was actually in the 1966 Mr. America contest that Chet Yorton won. He took second place to Chet Yorton. So Don is a very well-known bodybuilder for those who follow the golden era of bodybuilding, because he had that classic V taper. And I believe he beat Frank Zane out the following year in 1967 at the IFBB Mr. America. Don Howarth won that contest. That was Don's, I think, biggest win in his bodybuilding career. And he beat Frank Zane. And then, of course, Frank Zane won the following year in 1968. So we got an interview with Don Howarth coming up also. I just talked to him a couple days ago at his home in California. Don is now 83 years old, and he still sounds pretty good shape. And he had an interesting interview about how bodybuilding was in the 1960s, the good points and the bad points. Of course, bodybuilding was not well known back then, and it was very hard to make any money at it. So we got an interview, like I said, coming up with Don in the next couple of weeks. Excuse my voice today, guys. I got a head cold that I got this weekend. I have no idea how I got that. I've been training hard, taking care of myself. But one day last week, I think I was drinking so much water. Must have drank like 2 gallons of water one day. I think I was going to the bathroom so much. I don't know, maybe I lost some minerals or something. But I was feeling run down after that. And then this head cold caught up to me over the weekend. So hopefully I'll be back in good shape by tomorrow so I can get back to my training. Because the diet is still going good, but I got to stick with it every day in order to keep losing those inches. My new book that I've been talking about, Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, that is selling pretty well on Amazon.com. So I want to thank everybody went on Amazon and bought the book. I appreciate your support. And I just ordered about 20 copies for myself because I had a few people order them from me. If you want to order one from me, an autographed copy, just go to naturalolympia@gmail.com and let me know, and I can send you out a book. And I am still offering that special deal where I will give you a free copy of the Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder if you order either a training or a diet course from me on my new website, dadbodtoripbod.com. If you go on there, you can just fill out the questionnaire for a personalized training or diet program, and I will send you out a free copy of the Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder if you do that. I'm going to send a couple copies to the guys from Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, VJ and Scott, and they're going to get the copy and review it, and then I think they're going to have me on their show, because in addition to Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, they also have another radio show, or podcast show, I should say, called Advices Radio. So they might have me on there so we could talk about the book and the training and diet programs I use as a natural bodybuilder to get ready for my competitions, which is what the book is all about. I got a lot of emails this week, which was great. It's great hearing from you guys. I sent out one of those group emails last week showing what was on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast this week, and I got a lot of responses, so I think I'm going to keep doing that. I was sending out that email pretty consistently a couple months ago, but I haven't done it recently. So I think I'm going to try and do that every week, because it seems like you guys really responded, because I got a lot of emails. So I did want to mention the emails. I did want to read some of them, since you guys did send in your email questions or just your comments. So I wanted to give you guys your shout outs. Joe Hoffman said, John, I love the podcast. Several times a week, I take long walks to burn fat, and the podcasts keep me going. Is there any way to get Franco and Zane? I know Arnold might be a little bit much. Keep up the good work. That's Joe Hoffman. Yeah, Joe, I would love to get Franco and Zane. I really haven't reached out to Zane yet. I have tried to get a hold of Franco on Facebook, but no luck. I think I'm probably going to have to know somebody who knows him. I know he just did an interview with Rick Drayson on Rick's show, but Rick is out in California. But yeah, I'd love to talk to Franco, and I'd really love to talk to Frank Zane. I'm going to try and get a hold of him. Some people said he might charge money to do it, but I don't know. But yeah, Arnold would be my dream interview, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen. Thank you for your comment. I got another comment from Scott Barron. He had an interesting idea. He said, John, I thought about an out-of-the-box show topic. Why don't you send a letter to 1006 Pacific Avenue in Venice, California, via snail mail, and see whether or not the current owners would be willing to do an interview. Give them the option to either do a Skype or a radio interview. topic of discussion would obviously be the historical significance of the former Gold's Gym building. That building is now worth several million dollars. How long have they owned it? Were they the owners that had some of the old bodybuilders, including Lou Ferrigno, there for a reunion party several years ago? Ask them if Arnold has ever stopped by during one of his frequent bike rides. So, yeah, that might be a good idea. I'm going to be out in California in a few weeks for Memorial Day weekend, so maybe I could get a hold of those guys before I go out there. That would be a really cool interview to do out there, because I know that building is still there. Every time I'm in California, I see it. So thank you for that suggestion, Scott. I'm going to give that a try. I heard from my friend Al Yakich out in Chicago. Al was actually the one who set me up with Don Howarth. He had his phone number. So Al is a good friend of mine from Chicago. He's an old school guy. He was good friends with Sergio Oliva, and he knew Rock Stonewall pretty well. We talked about Rock. Rock was a great bodybuilder from the 1960s who was from the Chicago area. He's also good friends with Bob Gaida. And when I lived in Chicago, Al and Bob and Bill Sino, all those guys used to come to my contest. And, you know, because I used to promote two bodybuilding shows in Chicago every year, natural bodybuilding shows. So those guys would come out and support it. So they were great. And they actually got Sergio to come a couple times. So that was good before Sergio passed away. He got to come to my contest. So anyways, Al, I sent him the photos that Dave Mastorakis put up on our website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com. Those great old backstage photos from 65 and 66 Olympia. And Al sent me an email and he said, thanks for the photos. They are incredible. Most impressive are the photos of Don Howarth and the extremely rare photo of Rock Stonewall. And that was a rare photo of Rock Stonewall, because all the years I've been in bodybuilding, I've heard about Rock Stonewall. And of course, we've been talking about Rock the last couple of weeks when we've been talking about the 1966 competitions out at Brooklyn Academy of Music. And Al said in 1967, Rock bought Irvin Johnson's old gym. And Irvin Johnson, of course, is Rio H. Blair. So he said he bought Irvin Johnson's old gym at 22 East Van Buren from Chuck Renslow. And we mentioned Chuck Renslow last week on our interview with Jerry Branham, because we were talking about the judges, and Chuck was one of the judges at the 66 Mr. Olympia. And I guess he was Weider's correspondent out in Chicago. So anyways, Al said in 1969, Rock got run out of town by Gus Alex, the guy who ran the outfits interest in the Loop back then, for not paying the street tax for Rock's pimping activities. So he said the gym originally opened in 1945, and under Rock's poor management, it closed in August of 1969. Sad day for bodybuilding. So Al's always got the great info on what was going on. For those of you that didn't know, Rock Stonewall was a pimp, I guess, in Chicago, and he got ran out by the Chicago outfit. So that was pretty funny. So thanks to Al, and thank you, Al, for setting me up on that interview with Don Howarth. Farhan Satter said, I love the podcast with Jerry Branham, Brother John. So thank you. So keep up the good work. I thought that was a great interview, too. I want to thank Jerry again for coming on. Hopefully we can get him on here again, because he's great interview. He's really got great stories. Tim Christ sent me an email, and he said, hey, John, I just wanted to drop you a line and tell you how great your show is. I've been bodybuilding for as long as I can remember. My first show was in 1972. Wow. And I'm competing on May 19th in the Masters Over 60. I get a lot of inspiration from your podcast. Keep up the good work. Bodybuilding forever. All right, that was great. Mark Hastings said, John, I love the podcast. I'm wondering if you can sell me a signed copy of your new book. If so, let me know. I'm doing my second contest in about 8 weeks at age 52. So I hope to learn some good tricks from your experiences. Okay, yeah, I did send Mark out his book yesterday. So thank you, Mark, for ordering that. All these old time guys are still going. That's great to hear. John Baywick sent me an email and he said, hey, John, I just finished a telephone conversation with Rick Wayne. He is interested in doing a podcast or podcast with you. Rick has always been extraordinary, both for his physique and, more importantly, for his intellect. He will give you verbal access to the bodybuilding and political scene in the 1960s and 70s from his unique perspective. This should be amazing. He said, if you want me to be part of these interviews, let me know. These interviews could be a landmark for you. Please ask him about Jimmy Caruso's iconic backstage group shot. And so he gave me Rick's number. So I have tried to reach Rick this week, but no luck yet. He is in St. Lucia, which is an island in the Bahamas. So hopefully I will keep trying, and hopefully we can get a hold of Rick Wayne. That would be an extraordinary interview. I love Rick Wayne's writing. back in the 1970s. And, of course, for those of you that know your bodybuilding history, Rick had an incredible physique. I believe he's a Mr. World winner himself in the IFBB. And his career was kind of cut short quickly because he had an injury. He was supposed to go up against Franco and Frank Zane in the 1976 Mr. Olympia. That was going to be his big comeback. And he was training at Vince's gym for it. He was looking great. And he hurt his neck. He had a really bad neck injury. And that was it. He never went back into competition. And then he started writing for Joe Weider, which was great because I used to love Rick's writing. He was a really, really good writer. I think one of the best bodybuilding writers ever. And his books were really, really good. So I would love to talk to Rick Wayne. I'm sure he's got some great stories. And like I said, I really admired him as a writer. So I will keep working on that and let you guys know. Hopefully keep your fingers crossed and we can get that interview up pretty soon on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I got a comment on my YouTube channel from a Nafu Berry. And he was commenting on the Phil Williams interview I did, which is a video interview. And he said, "I can't believe I'm just finding this now. Thank you, John. Phil, I hope you see this comment. You are the man. You were such a huge inspiration to me when I was a kid in the 1980s. I'm so happy to see you alive and well. Peace and blessings to you, Phil. You are legendary." All right, that was a nice comment. So I will be seeing Phil in person at the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame in Memorial Day at Venice Beach. So I will pass that comment along to him, and it'll be great to see Phil inducted. I'm glad he's getting some recognition because he was a great bodybuilder. He was one of my favorites, too. So I look forward to that in a few more weeks out in Venice, California. I got another email here from John Ciofi. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, John. C-I-U-F-I. And he says, "Hi, John. I just wanted to say how much I'm enjoying your Bodybuilding Legends podcast shows. I am 62 years old, another old school guy. I'm 62 years old, soon to be 63. And I've been following all the bodybuilding stars starting back in the 60s when I bought my first 110-pound weight set from the sporting goods store. I always used weight training to help gain strength when I entered gymnastics in ninth grade and through my high school years. It's also helped me as I began a triathlon career, which included an Ironman finish." Wow. "I got tired of that sport, and I've begun bodybuilding again, and I'm surprised that my body has responded to the training, and I'm making some gains. I went to Jim Mannion's NPC Pittsburgh Championship today." Yeah, that was this weekend. "And I was very impressed with the athletes, both men and women. I also got a chance to meet Mr. Mannion, which was a great thrill for me. I also bought some nutrition items from Redcon One booth, and I mentioned your name as the reason I was buying it." Wow, that was great. Supporting our sponsors. Thank you for doing that, John. And he says, "I always wanted to express my thanks to you for all your work in interviewing all the great bodybuilders of yesteryear. I'm really getting a huge kick out of listening to them. Great job, John. Thanks." All right. Thank you, John. And thanks for mentioning us to Redcon One. I appreciate that. And yeah, I was watching on Facebook this weekend all the videos from the Pittsburgh Championships, which Jim Mannion puts on every year out in Pittsburgh. And he has all the top bodybuilders out there guest posing. So Phil Heath was out there, Big Ramy, William Bonick, and Nathan D'Ascia, who's looking really good because he's going to the New York Pro in 2 weeks. And they also had a pro lineup. And in fact, Redcon One's competitor, who I cannot think of his name right now, but he was competing in the Classic Physique, the Pro Classic Physique. And he's got a great physique. Steve something. Really, really small, 27-inch waist. Incredible. So he's got great shape. He's got a great future. So he'll be giving Breon a run for his money at the pro division and the Classic Physique. So that looked like a really great show. So thank you for your email, John. And then my old friend Alex Gaborkov, who I met, God, probably about 15 years ago. I did a seminar out in Michigan, which is the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, MTU, Michigan Tech University. And we made that into a video. And if you go on my products page on the Bodybuilding Legends show, you can get that video. It's called Bodybuilding Seminar and Competitions, and I have the whole seminar on there. Alex was there. He was at the thing, and he stays in touch with me once in a while. So he got the email about what was going on with the Bodybuilding Legends show website, and he said, "Great to get this email from you. I haven't corresponded with you in a while, but I still can't stress enough what an impact you had on me and my progress. I don't compete, but I'm constantly being asked by friends and students about how to make progress or what to do to get the results, so I'm constantly dropping your name and website. I have your website on display in my classroom. I'm a high school science teacher, And as you may know, I even had our school library purchase your book and DVD. My son, who is almost 13, has now started to train, and it's exciting to see his passion for it. Thanks to you, I know how to get him started, and I have all your resources available to him. Anyway, in closing, please send me an invoice for your new book, as I would love to purchase one. I really wish I could have made the drive to train with you in Florida in the summer of 2016, but we were just too far away from Tampa. Any chance of coming back to Michigan Tech for another seminar? So I've been talking to Alex, and I guess he is going to try to make that happen. He's going to try and get me out there this summer out in Michigan or in the fall to have me do another seminar, and he wants to really promote it and get a lot of people out there. So hopefully that can happen. And thank you, Alex, again for the email and for purchasing my book. I did put one of our podcast interviews, the one with Wayne Galash, where we were talking about the NABBA Mr. Universe from the winners from 1971 to 1975. And I put that on my YouTube channel with pictures. So if you're into YouTube more than you're into podcasts, you can go check that out. I got a response from Shahzad Syed, and he said, thank you so much, John Hansen, for making these podcast interviews. You, sir, are doing a great job. I don't have the words to describe my feelings about the work you're doing because English is not my first language. But, sir, I really appreciate your work, and I respect you a lot. God bless you. Well, thank you for that nice email. And, yeah, check that out, guys. It's my latest email on YouTube. It's the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast, Season 5, Episode 2, where, as I said, me and Wayne Galash talk about the NABBA Mr. Universe winners from 71 through 75. So we talk about Bill Pearl beating out Sergio in 71. We talk about Frank Zane winning the pro division of the NABBA Universe in 72. And then Wayne did a photo shoot with Frank at that park out in London. And we talk about 73, where Chris Dickerson finally won the NABBA Universe. And we talk about Boyer Coe's wins. I believe in 73, he won the pro division. And in 75, he won the pro division again. So we got some really, really good pictures on there. And it's really entertaining to see that again. So you could check that out, even if you heard it already on the podcast. And I got an email today from Eduardo Janey. Eduardo ordered my training and diet program about a month ago. And he said, I feel thinner and my clothes are feeling nicer. The gym is going fine. So he is making some great progress. And he told me he's adding some more cardio to his workouts. So we got Eduardo much leaner from the diet only in 4 weeks. I think he lost like 2 inches off his waist. So now we're going to adjust his diet so he can start putting on some more muscle mass and keep getting leaner as he goes along. So if any of you guys are interested in getting a diet or training program from me, as I said, go to dadbodtoripbod.com, and I will set you up with that. They have a questionnaire, I should say. Just fill out the questionnaire, and we can get that going. And like I said, if you do that during the month of May, I will send you out a free copy of my book, Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. All right, so thanks to all you guys for sending out emails. If any of you guys have any more comments or questions about the show or anybody you would want to suggest that I try to do an interview with, you can email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com, or you can also email me at john@bodybuildinglegendshow.com, either one, and I will read your comments on the air, just like I did this week. So thanks to all you guys for sending out those comments. And you can also get on my email list. On the website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, at the bottom of the page, you can put in your name and email, and you will be on my email list, so you'll get our weekly updates every week. Or you can just email me at, again, at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and tell me you want to be on our list, and I'll put you on there. And that way you can keep abreast of everything that happens on the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website, like those Dave Mastrakis pictures that we put up last week. Or you can, of course, hear the podcast each week, and we are working on some more Legends interviews, video interviews, that are in the long form. They're over an hour long, and they have pictures and video clips of the guy's career that we're talking to. So those are always great to see. We've got about 20 of them up so far on the website. So check them out if you haven't seen them, and we're adding new ones every month. So be sure to check that out. Before we go to our interview with Roger Schwab, I do want to mention that we are brought to you also again by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. They have very competitive pricing also, along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few reasons to give them a call for more information and experience firsthand what sets them apart from the rest. So they are in Tampa, Florida, but they will work with anybody in the United States. So they can work with you by Skype and send you out any products that you order. So you can call them at their office, which is 813-922-8939, or visit them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's FL for Florida, alternativemeds.com, or call them again at 813-922-8939. And they will give you, if you tell them you heard it on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, you will get a free consultation and you will get 20% off of your first order, which is a lot. All right, so that is it for our opening. Thank you again for all your emails and your questions and your comments. And here is our interview with Roger Schwab, where we're going to talk about the 1966 Mr. Olympia, Mr. World, Mr. Universe, and Mr. America. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I'm joined again by my friend Roger Schwab, and today we are talking about the 1966 Mr. Olympia, the second Mr. Olympia, which was also held at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in New York. Roger, welcome back to the show again.
Good to talk to you, John.
All right, so that was a great show we did last week where we talked about the 1965 Mr. Olympia, and you were there as a young man with your friends. You drove in from Philadelphia to see it. So now here we are, a second year later, 1966. What was the atmosphere going into the show that year? You had been reading the magazines, I'm sure. Who were you looking forward to seeing that year?
Okay, so 65 was like the first year of the Mr. Olympia contest, and we really didn't know what to expect or who was going to enter, except was which was said in Muscle Builder that they're all going to enter.
You know, all right.
But it basically, it came down to a tremendous contest between Poole and Scott, with Earl Maynard a distant third, but a respectable third. But this year, we knew that this contest was going to take the next step forward. We were told that Scott was going to try to defend his title. Mm-hmm. And this year, maybe, you would see some more. There was outside hope that a guy named Chuck Sipes was going to be there. And Sipes was kind of like a legend almost in bodybuilding. You know, here's this rugged outdoors guy with tremendous forearms, muscular physique that almost looked like it was carved out of rock, and very sinewy and muscular, great, great, tough-looking physique.
Yeah.
And some friends in New York had said that Harold Poole was in the best shape of his life. So we were ready. And, of course, the winner the previous year, it was Sergio Oliva, who was entering the IFBB, and so Sergio Oliva was supposed to enter the contest also, so we knew. I'd say the anticipation in 66 was even greater than 65, and the place was packed, and everybody knew this was going to be the contest, which it turned out to not disappoint.
Now, talk a little bit about Sergio. What had you read about Sergio, and how much have you seen of him in the magazines? Because he was pretty new on the IFBB scene. I remember he started off in the AAU. And kind of like Harold Poole, I think he got a little disgusted with the fact that he was probably never going to win because they were going more for the white champions, and there was some racism involved back in the AU back then. So what did you hear about Sergio, and what did you think of him, seeing his pictures in the magazines back then?
I thought exactly what you're saying was totally spot on. Sergio, as great as Bob Guida was in the year 65 or 66, but Sergio didn't win, and he won most. Again, he was given what a lot of the muscular black athletes at the time were given. He won most muscular and indigenous
right.
in Mr. America. And as good as Bob Guida was, and he was really good. I mean, no weak
yeah.
body parts. But Sergio was Sergio, and this was the advent of somebody who was going to be a world beater. And he had left the AAU, and he was entering the IFBB. So I think this was his first year. Or maybe let me just skip this. If I remember correctly, I think that he won the Mr. World contest this year in 66. He won the Mr. World. They had four contests that night. They had the IFBB Mr. America, mm-hmm. Mr. World, Mr. Universe, and Mr. Olympia. I think that they had the four contests because they wanted to have titles for these great bodybuilders that they didn't have in the AAU. And okay. It was a way to get them in the IFBB field and keep them there. So this was Sergio's initial contest in the IFBB, and he went into the Mr. World cut. He went into Mr. World.
Right.
But eventually that night, he also entered the Mr. Olympia. So this was a night that just did not disappoint anybody. There was four contests, and really the great ones of the IFBB were all. And if 1965 was the beginning of the dominance of the IFBB, mm-hmm. 1966 was the next step.
Okay. Yeah, let me mention the other winners that night, because like you said, they didn't just have the Mr. Olympia back then. The Mr. Olympia was like the finale of a big night. So they had the IFBB Mr. America, the IFBB Mr. World, the IFBB Mr. Universe, and then they finished off with the Olympia. So the America was won that year by Chet Yorton, who took second to Dave Draper the year before. And then, like you said, Sergio won the Mr. World, and then Dave Draper won the Mr. Universe. And then in the Mr. Olympia, they had four competitors that year. They had Sergio, Harold Poole, Larry Scott, and Chuck Sipes.
Now, what a lineup is that? You know, that rivals 1972 in Essen with Serge Nouvre, Sergio Oliva, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. But
yeah.
Going back to that year, to that Mr. America contest first, it was Chet mm-hmm. Yorton who won, who, in my opinion, should have won the previous year over
yeah.
Draper, but he got... He won, and then subsequently that year he went to London and defeated Arnold, I believe, in the
yes.
1966 NABBA Mr. Universe.
Right.
But Yorton was even better in 66 than he was in 65, and he was great in 66. I'm not sure I remember this correctly, but Frank Zane also competed in 66 and was another step along the road of getting realizing his potential. He was
yeah.
not quite there in 66. But if I recall, he was even sharper than he was in 65, and 65 showed so much promise. So he lost to Yorton, and I think that was a good decision.
Yeah, Frank got first in the medium class, and Chet won the tall class, and then Rock Stonewall won the short class.
Again, another great muscular bodybuilder. If I recall correctly, Don Howarth was in there someplace, and he subsequently the following year won the contest.
Yeah. Okay, so Frank looked better, and Chet Yorton probably looked his best ever that night, or the best up to
well,
that point, at least.
I think 66 was Chet Yorton's best year for both. He had to be awfully good to beat Arnold in London,
yeah.
even though Arnold was not anywhere near the Arnold of the 1970s. But he was a justifiable and deserved winner in both contests, in my opinion.
Yeah. So what did you think of Sergio when he came out for the Mr. World? Because I remember, you know, I've seen Sergio on stage before posing, and it's just shocking when you see a guy like Sergio come out with that tiny waist and he raises his arms up and hits the double bicep. So what were your impressions of seeing Sergio for the first time?
Sergio was, he was in a different class than almost anybody else as far as muscularity, with the exception of Harold Poole. But still in 1966, in my opinion, it was not the Sergio of 1972
right.
in Essen when he realized his peak. Just like Larry Scott later on in his life in 1979 got some bad advice to enter the IFBB contest in Canada when he
yeah,
was not
Canada
nearly
Canada.
The man he was in 65. Sergio in the 1984 Olympia was nowhere near he was in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
But 1966, you could see the potential, the promise was there. But
yeah.
again, my opinion, he should have won the Mr. World contest that night and let it be that night and not going on to the Olympia because he wasn't going to win that show. He really
yeah.
wasn't. As
yeah.
I said to you previously, in 1965, Earl Maynard shouldn't have gone to the Olympia, entered the Olympia that night. He already won the universe. He didn't have to try for the Olympia. The dramatics of winning was already over for him. Sergio was great, but he wasn't going to win that night, and he wasn't going to play second either.
So you can see the potential in Sergio.
He had tremendous potential and was a deserving winner of that contest. If I
yeah.
recall, why they threw the Mr. World contest in that night was so he had a contest that he could win.
Right.
But he was not. If he had competed in the universe against Yorton, that would have really, I mean, against Draper in the Universe, that would have been some contest.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They threw that contest in, I think, just so Sergio could have a title in the IFBB.
Right. Yeah. Welcome to the IFBB.
Yeah. So that, exactly. It was a great welcome for him. But after that contest, they had the Mr. Universe that night, and that was the night that Draper won against some great competition, if I remember. But it would have been really interesting to see Draper against Sergio that night.
Yeah. How do you compare Draper in 66 compared to 65?
Draper was a more mature physique. Mm-hmm. He was getting leaner, and they always talk about his legs not being up to par, but there's nothing wrong with Draper's legs. They weren't up to his upper body, but his upper body wasn't quite there. I mean, his pecs weren't there where his lats were, and his lats and his arms were just outstanding, especially that three-quarter back pose that he was famous for.
Yeah.
He was great, but he wasn't what he would be 4 years later. So again, it was just a maturing process with Dave Draper, just like it was for Larry Scott.
Mm-hmm.
They were both going to realize their potential. Draper in 1970, Scott in 1979. Gosh, isn't that interesting? I mean, you know, Zane was competing in 1965 and you know, really competed into the early 80s.
Yeah.
How long a guy was in that kind of shape is just tremendous. But just like Zane, Draper was a physique in progress,
mm-hmm.
and he would realize his potential a little bit later, but he was good enough to win the Universe that night. If he had competed against Sergio that night, if there was no Mr. World title, I think that Sergio would have won.
Okay. Let's talk about the Mr. Olympia that year, 1966. I'll just go through these guys one by one, and you can give me your opinion. We talked a little bit about Chuck Zipes, how he had that real rugged build, and I remember seeing pictures in the magazines of Chuck, and I remember his forearms were really, really massive, and he had those big arms and really sharp abs. So, he did have that massive rugged build that it really distinguished him from a lot of the other competitors back then.
You are, again, spot on. There's nothing to add to that, except this year, as opposed to 1965, we were a little bit more confident going to this contest, so we were backstage after the contest.
Okay.
Luckily, and we'll always remember the few moments that I had a chance to talk to Chuck Zipes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost surreal, I would say, in that he was a very soft-spoken, gentle guy who only had the greatest things to say about all the other competitors, especially Larry Scott and Norton and even Draper, although the other two were from the West Coast. But there was something there. There was some trouble. There was something troubling. I don't know what it was. And it was very prescient because years later, you know, he obviously had demons like all of us have in some way or another, but manifested themselves in him. But he was a great guy that night. And he was proud to be on stage. He was already Mr. Universe and Mr. America in the IFBB, and they had two great titles, and that was about as far as he was going to go. And he wasn't going to win this night, but he certainly won the fans, and everybody respected Chuck Zipes. A great physique, and I would say without even unhesitatingly that he realized his potential.
What was the crowd reaction to him, Roger? Because he had to be in the magazines a lot too back then, right?
He smiled when he got up on stage, and he did his signature trade poses. And I think that night also he did a strongman act.
I
think he blew up a hot water bottle that night or something like that.
Yeah.
But he was great, and he got up on that stage and just stood there. Not the best pose. To be nice about it, he was not the best poser. He was probably the worst poser of the four, that's for sure. It was kind of his trademark. He wasn't going to be a fluid, beautiful poser. He was a rugged outdoor guy, the type of guy you see with a chainsaw outside, you know, cutting down a tree or something like that.
Right.
And he stood there like strength. He looked like a guy who could bench press a tremendous quantity, and squat or deadlift was exactly the same. You know,
he
looked strong, and he was strong.
Yeah, he was strong. I remember.
He was worth the price of admission even if he plays fourth that night in the Olympia contest. Mm-hmm. I would say right in front of him would be Sergio, who again was not quite realizing his potential, but certainly showed that potential. He was great. He posed great, and he looked great. And then there was left only two, and that could have gone either way.
It's telling what you said about Chuck Sipes, because you said he had those inner demons. He did commit suicide, I guess, later on in his life. But that's telling that you could see that when you talked to him, huh?
I don't know if I could see that. As I said, it was surreal to the extent that there was something there. There was just something I recalled that when he died years later, I said, you know, oh my God, you know, I was there.
Yeah.
I was there and talked to him. Was there anything I could have possibly ever, of course there wasn't, and he didn't know me from Adam,
right.
But we, you know, it was a good moments together and a good handshake and a smile, and this was a great guy who was just great.
Mm-hmm.
Just nice and had everything nice to say about everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
Self-deprecating, I would say, in the extreme.
Right. So we talked a little bit about Sergio. Tell me about Harold Poole that year. How did he look compared to 65?
I thought that Harold Poole was at his best in 1963 until I saw him in 1966. And I think that he was at his best in 66. And I think that Poole fully thought that he deserved to win the Olympia that year, exactly how he thought he should have beat Vern Weaver in 1963 in Pennsylvania. And I think he was, the fact that he lost, I think it was a tremendous blow to him. You know, as they always say about a champion, you know, you can't just beat the champion. You have to dethrone that champion. You have to knock him out. And in my opinion, Poole didn't knock out Scott. Whether Scott was as good in 66 or 65, it was too long ago for me to nitpick.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember at the end of the show saying how great Poole was, how great Scott was, that it could go either way, but that Scott would win the contest.
Yeah.
And I would have placed any amount that he would win the contest, and he did win the contest.
Did Larry get the same reaction?
He got the same reaction, I would say, in six. It might have been a little bit more muted than 65, but 60.
Yeah.
You can't compare anything to 65, I don't think.
Right.
Nobody had seen anything that they were about to see that night.
Right.
So the anticipation was great. I would say, though, he didn't let anybody down, put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So if he wasn't 65, he was very, very, very close to it. Good enough that I thought he'd beat Harold Poole at his best. And it could have gone either way, but I think the crowd would have rebelled if Scott didn't win again. And Scott, at the end of the contest, announced that he was finished. In my opinion, I think he announced he was retiring for one name or one reason only, and it wasn't Harold Poole. I think it was because Sergio Oliva.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he realized that Oliva was going to get so good that there was no way that in a year or two anybody could stop Oliva.
Hmm.
And I think, in retrospect, he was right.
What did Larry say when he went to the microphone and announced he wasn't going to compete? Did he give a reason? Or
no, I don't think so, John. You know, I don't think I recall. I vividly see him standing at the mic, taking the mic, and announcing that he was retiring and this was his last contest, and the crowd reaction. But I don't think he gave any reasons.
Hmm.
I just think he had had it. You know.
Yeah.
I think it had. He wrote about it later in some of the magazines, you know, and I don't think he could have continued. I don't know if it would be his health or that he could maintain that, you know, that muscularity or whatever his reasons. But I think it was Sergio Oliva, because I don't think if he had come back in 1967, he could have beaten Oliva.
Yeah.
I think Scott got out at exactly the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, why he chose later to compete again is a total mystery to me.
Yeah, I remember reading an article where he said, I think it was right before that 66 Olympia, it might have even been in the hotel room, he was looking at his body in the mirror, and he just sort of felt apart from his body, and he felt like he was sort of missing out on life by putting so much into bodybuilding, and I think he was getting married, or he did get married at that time, and he wanted to spend more time with his wife, and I know he was living in Utah, right? Salt Lake City, Utah. And he just wanted to just be more of a regular guy and be more of a family man. And that was the reason he gave in the article, at least. But yeah, you're probably right. I'm sure seeing Sergio was another reason why he wanted to quit at that time.
Yeah, it's been mentioned a million times, but what was painted in the muscle magazines, and taking Larry Scott as a prime example of here you see this blonde Adonis guy who's in the pictures in the magazines with Betty Weider and Sherry Lewis and, you know, these beautiful women, and he has this great tan. He's doing ads for Rio Blair's protein with big smile on his face and this great physique, great tan, great protein and cream on Weider's magazines on the covers and the blonde hair and everything. You think that life is just so great. I mean, how could it be any better than to be Larry Scott in the 1960s?
Right.
Until you're Larry Scott in the 1960s, and obviously it wasn't the same if you were the person as the image that was projected.
Yeah. Do you think he was had just more charisma and was a better poser than Harold Poole, too?
He had more charisma and was a better poser than Harold Poole, too.
Yeah.
Was he as muscular? No. But did he have something? He had something, you know, that nobody... Well, Poole had, you know, muscularity at that time was indigenous to Harold Poole. And again, he could throw that most muscular pose, and Larry Scott wasn't about to get near that pose. But
yeah.
Harold Poole wasn't about to show the three, you know, the back, you know, the twisting back shot like Larry Scott with the arms like that, although Poole was no slouch in that department either. Look, as I said to you, that could have gone either way that night. That was probably the closest Mr. Olympia contest to, well, I shouldn't say it, certainly in the 60s, that was the closest contest, and that could have gone either way. But I think these crowd, the organizers of this contest knew that they better give Larry Scott Mr. Olympia that year. All hell was going to break loose, I think, in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
That's how I thought. But I think that was it for Poole pretty much, too. He continued to compete. I think he went to WABA eventually. I might be wrong about that. You might know better than me, but I don't think he ever hit that peak again that he did in 66, and I never thought he was going to get there again after 63, how good he was then, but 66 was his best, and he could have won. Another great physique that night, by the way, was this guy who was always featured in Iron Man. He was very short. His name was Gable Boudreaux.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a real Blair guy. I don't think he was any more than 5 feet two, but he had a tremendous physique. I don't remember how he placed that night. I just remember he was there, and I don't even remember which contest he entered, but he didn't let down either. I remember when you heard his name, you wondered if he was going to be as good as he was in the magazines, and he was even better. So it was a great night.
He won the short class at the Mr. Universe that night.
Yeah, it was a great night. No letdowns. Everybody, you know, everybody was there. Everybody was at or near their best, and one of the great contests ever. I'm glad I was there.
Yeah, I wrote an article a few years ago called The Aura of the Mr. Olympia, and I think Larry Scott really set the precedent for that, you know, where he had that charisma, and he had, it wasn't just the physique, but it was just the overall aura and the charisma that he presented and the posing, and I think that set the standard for future Mr. Olympias like Arnold and Frank Zane and, you know, Lee Haney, and they just had something special. It was more than just their body that they brought to the stage. And I think you needed that to win the Mr. Olympia, at least in the early days, you know?
No, you're right. It wasn't only just the early days either. I remember, well, in Arnold 1974 in New York, and I think one of the television stations covered that or whatever, but the way he looked that night, you know, I think took bodybuilding again to the next level.
Yeah.
I think he realized his potential in 74. He wasn't quite there in 75. He wasn't anywhere near there in 75, but good enough to win. But Arnold in 74, he had everything. And I think Dorian Yates in 1993, when he walked out about 15 pounds, 20 pounds heavier than he had the previous year, was another one of those shocking developments that took the sport to a different level.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were the relevant events, I think. Scott and Schwarzenegger and of course Lee Haney won for so many years, and he was, you know, and you know, to Lee Haney's credit, I mean, he progressed, he got better as he went along. I mean, this was a tremendous physique, just got better by the years. Did he have the same persona as Arnold? No. Did he have the same shocking impact that Dorian Yates had? No. But was he a steady, great physique who deserved to win his Olympias for the most part? Sure was, you know. And after that, when Ronnie Coleman got as massive as he got, that's when I kind of like, they were my waning years of peak interest, I would say. That was it.
Another interesting thing, too, about the 1966 Mr. Olympia was that was the first year they gave prize money, and they gave Larry Scott $1,000 in cash.
That's probably one of the reasons he bowed out.
But I don't think there was any other shows back then that was giving cash prizes, right?
No, I know. I don't think anybody
got
overly excited about their trophies either. So, you know, bodybuilding. Back in those days, you're in it for the passion. You're in it for the camaraderie and trying to realize your potential and all these great things. And then, I don't know. It was great to be around during that time. That's all I can say.
Well, at least he didn't get that crown again that he gave him in 65.
Exactly.
All right, Roger. Well, thank you for joining us again. And thanks for these great stories you told us about the 65 and 66 Mr. Olympias. And hopefully we'll get to talk to you again soon, because I know you were at many of these earlier shows. And there's nothing like getting that firsthand account of, you know, you were actually there and you saw it and you still remember these guys like it was not too long ago.
It was a great time to be interested in bodybuilding, I can tell you that. And I do want to take this time to tell you the respect that I have for you, that you carry on these podcasts and you keep alive the golden age of bodybuilding when everybody who was involved wanted to be involved. And it was just great times of great people, and you're keeping it alive, and my respect to you.
Oh, thanks, Roger. I appreciate that. I was around, too, during some of those years. I went to those Mr. Olympias in 1977 through 79, so I also was witness to how great the sport could be and how that energy and that excitement was there. And that's, I think, why I'm doing these podcasts. I'm trying to share that, the memories of what we went through and what we witnessed as fans, you know, so some of these younger guys can understand it.
Very good. Pleasure to talk.
All right, Roger. Thanks. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye, John.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Roger Schwab again for joining us for that interview. I want to thank Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Join us next week when we will have part two of our interview with Dave Mastorakis, where he will talk about the 1966 Mr. Olympia competition as well. And as you remember, Dave was on stage with those guys competing in the Mr. America. So that should be a great interview. So we will see you guys next week. Take care.